Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for KER Report. No more politics. Now we're talking about things that are going to make you, hopefully, a better person. Not that you guys need to be made better people. I know most of you pretty well from all the interactions that I've had with all of you on the blog, what, 100, 200 comments every weekend. But what, I'm switching a little bit away from politics because it's a subject that, try hard as I might, I never could really understand it. Never could understand why a lot of people felt the way they did. I got really lucky. One of my publicists, a lady who lives down in San Diego, suggested I chat since I'm making this rather major jump into an area of self-improvement. She suggested I talk with a gentleman, Curtis Morley. Curtis is a serial entrepreneur. He's an educator. He's a speaker, a thought leader, patent holder, inventor, businessman, and a coach. He's a founder of his own company, founder and CEO of a company called The Entrepreneur's Paradox, and he's a director of the CalArt Initiative on Technology, which is at the University of Utah. No small institution, for lack of better terms. This guy knows what he's talking about. I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about it and a little bit about his organization, and he can be of service to you. Curtis, you're on, sir.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk today. And yeah, I'm really excited to talk about the upcoming book called The Entrepreneur's Paradox. And the reason I wanted to write this book is because I have started multiple companies in my life. And through those companies, specifically the first two, I made every mistake possible in building a business. And some of them I didn't just make once, I made twice or three times. And there was a point where I realized there's a better way to do business. There's a better way to do all of this. And so as I continued to run different businesses, I started to look at the process. And so I started to look at other people, friends and peers that were also starting businesses. And it started to dawn on me that we were all experiencing very similar problems. And not only very similar problems, but we were experiencing them at very similar times throughout our business. And it made me really think, you know what, there is a better way, and I've got to figure this out. And so my purpose in writing the book is to help entrepreneurs take their business to the next level. And I've got a really audacious goal. I want to help 1 million entrepreneurs around the country and around the world.
How many?
1 million. 1 million entrepreneurs.
Curtis, that's a big number.
It's a really big number. And right now in the U.S., there's 33 million currently registered entrepreneurs in the United States. And you know, globally, that number expands dramatically. But it's a huge number. And I say, go big or go home. I really want to make an impact in the world, and I know I can with this book and with the principles that I've learned through my own mistakes, but then also through being able to coach and mentor other entrepreneurs and starting to see the patterns that have developed. And that's what I write about in the book, The Entrepreneur's Paradox.
Curtis, let me ask you a question. Now, one of the reasons that I did okay in my career is I read every self-improvement book that was ever put on the market. I actually spent I spent about 5 years getting my education, which included a couple of master's degrees and also and an MBA, which is obviously a master's. But during that time, Curtis, I read everything that Norman Vincent Peale ever wrote. I read everything that Napoleon Hill, all of those guys ever wrote. Million books out there, and every one of them helped me. How's your book, The Entrepreneur's Paradox, different from the rest of the books that are out there right now?
I'm really glad you asked that, because The Entrepreneur's Paradox, it focuses on the two pieces of entrepreneurship. There's really two cores to any startup business. And that's the business itself, and then that's the entrepreneur. So the first piece is the business, second is the entrepreneur. And the book bridges the gap between the two. It's half a book about how to get the business to where it needs to go, and half the book is on helping the entrepreneur themselves to become the leader to take their business to the next level. Because it does take an evolution. It takes a progression, and in sometimes it takes a complete personality reboot to be able to take that next step with the business. And that's what I focus on in the book.
You know, you mentioned one thing, I guess I should say your publicist mentioned one thing, and that is something that I learned years and years ago is the fact of the matter is if you want to be successful, you need to work smart, not harder. Working smarter, not harder, is the goal of most of the people who comprise your audience. You wrote this book to help entrepreneurs create explosive growth in your business. What's the number one call to action for these people? The number one tip?
Yeah. If I were to say the starting point is that, you know, I talked in the book about, in the book, The Entrepreneur's Paradox, about how a lot of people, they'll be in the normal world, they'll be in the real world, which consists of waking up every morning, going to the day job, meeting the boss, sitting down at the computer, typing away, going home and doing the same thing over and over. And every now and then, that person will take a trip over to Entrepreneur Island, and they'll dip their toes in the water, they'll play in the sand, they'll get this exhilarating rush and say, man, that was great.
Yep.
And some of us, we get the crazy wild hair idea that, you know what, I want to actually move to Entrepreneur Island. And we do. We set up shop on the beach. We pull in some great fish. We're chopping coconuts down. We're building sandcastles. We're having the best time of our lives. And as we're sitting on the beach looking out as the waves are rolling in, all of a sudden we look behind us because we hear a noise, and we see an alligator crawling out of the bushes behind us. And we're thinking, holy cow, I've got to protect everything I've built here. So we jump on that alligator, we start wrestling. And day after day, we wake up and we
see new alligators. You, my friend, are a much braver man than I am, jumping on an alligator. Of course, then again, you don't have a lot of alligators down in Utah.
This is true.
Yeah.
Not many alligators. And so the alligators represent the things that we didn't anticipate, the things that are outside of what we were thinking this business would be. And if you look at how most people get started with their business, they're typically really skilled, really talented, or have an amazing idea, and they're kind of the best in the world at what they do. And because of that, they say, well, if I'm this good at what I do, and if so many people want what I do, well, then of course I need to start a business. And what they don't realize is that building a product or building a service has nothing to do with building a business. They're two very different functions. And the paradox that is the entrepreneur's paradox, which is what I wrote the book about, is that the very thing that gets people into business, that skill or that talent for building this amazing product or service, is actually the very thing that will prevent them from succeeding. And breaking out of that paradox is what's crucial in being able to take the business to the next level.
Well, we particularly have challenges right now in the sense that kids are graduating from universities. The employment rate for recent university graduates right now is pretty low, so you got to be pretty sharp if you want to do it on your own, as I did and as you obviously have done. I want to talk about that a little bit. We got to take a real quick commercial break here, Mr. Morley, and going to be right back. I have a couple of what I think are very important questions for you. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. I'm going to be right back.
Yeah.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back chatting with Curtis J. Morley, author of The Entrepreneur's Paradox. Curtis, I have a question for you. We live in a very unique time right now. I have been around a lot of years, sir, and I have to tell you, I never in my wildest dreams ever thought that I would live in a situation that had the economic challenges that it does today. Never thought I'd live in a situation. Heck, I didn't even know what the word pandemic meant probably 10 years ago. I do know today very well what it means in the sense that I know that young people today are having a very hard time finding employment. If you're a computer whiz, if you're a high-tech whiz, that's one thing. But if you're a typical college graduate, degree in history, what have you, it's kind of tough. Let me ask you a question. During this worldwide pandemic, is it possible for a sharp college undergraduate, an individual man or woman who really has a passion as you did, can a startup business that they have an idea for survive in so shaky an economy?
I absolutely believe it. And I think right now is a great time to start a business as an
entrepreneur. Why do you say that?
Because there's so much opportunity. Every time there's a challenge, every time there's a problem, it really is, problems and challenges really are opportunities dressed in work clothes. And every time there's something new, there's a change, there's a struggle, truly that is an opportunity for an individual to go in and create something great because of the challenge. The challenge is the opportunity. And so right now, because of the way the world's changing, because there's so much disruption, right now is a perfect time to enter the market in a disruptive way. And not only adapt, but, you know, ride the tide of what's happening right now, where there's so much difference from a year ago to today that there's a need for new services. There's a need for new, whether it's medical or food delivery or entertainment or anything. The world is changing, and there's a need to adapt and to meet those changes. And so now I think is a phenomenal time to start a business because there is so much opportunity. It's, like I said, it's a challenge dressed in work clothes. And all you got to do is put on those work clothes, or an opportunity dress in work clothes, excuse me.
Yeah.
And then the opportunity is yours.
I personally think, Curtis, that what a person needs to really succeed is something that, as an entrepreneur, is something that you obviously have. You never give up. You have to have a very, very healthy passion to make a difference in the world. If you have that passion, trust me, nobody can stop you. Give our listeners some examples, if you would, of some ideas for these young people.
That's awesome. I'll never forget an experience I had. I was talking with a friend. I had started my first business. It was a full-service media agency. We did everything from web design to back-end database to radio and TV commercials. We did the whole gambit, logos, you name it. And it was 2000. The bubble had burst. Companies were going out of business. And I was sitting in a car with my friend Reed Wright, who started a phenomenal company called Axis 41. And
I'm sorry, called what?
Axis 41.
Okay.
Also a media and marketing and full service web agency. And he said to me, he said, "Curtis, you look around, you know, the bubble's burst, companies are going out of business left and right." He said, you know why you and I are still surviving?" And I turned to him and I said, "No, Reed, why?" He goes, "It's because we're too dumb to know when to quit."
Never had anybody tell me that. And maybe that's a good thing. Anyway, elaborate, sir.
And what the principle or the truth that he was getting at behind that is just exactly what you said, is this indefatigable drive to make it succeed no matter what. That when the normal person would say, okay, this is enough, it's time to quit, the entrepreneur says, okay, what do I got to do to make this work? Do I need to sell my car to make payroll? Do I need to, you know, what is it that I need to do? And then they do it. And that's at the heart of entrepreneurship, is the passion, is the drive, is the ability to say, you know what, today sucks, but I don't care. I'm going to make this work.
You know, that's the attitude that you have to have. I will say one thing just that I find to be interesting, as I think if your goal is accomplishment, and if accomplishment doesn't necessarily mean, you know, to just survive financially, or even just if your accomplishment is just to your dream of accomplishment is just to make as much money as possible, I don't think that's going to work. And I learned that from one of your colleagues, another author whose books I read numerous times, Stephen Covey. He's actually from Salt Lake, if I'm not mistaken. Hey, do me a favor. Tell me very quickly, getting down to the University of Utah, tell me a little bit about the Calendar Initiative on Technology.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks for the opportunity. The Calendar Initiative on Technology is an initiative with the mission being to create the most digitally literate students in the world, regardless of degree. So helping students add technology to their degree, whether they're a medical student, an English major, a business student, it doesn't matter. We provide an overlay to their degree with technology such as artificial intelligence, blockchain, Bitcoin, web and app development, UI, UX, all sorts of technologies to be able to add to their degree so that then when they go into the modern world, kind of like what you're talking about, and when they go into this crazy modern world of ours, that they can use that technology to enhance their ability to get jobs, but also to enhance the companies that they go and work for. And it's just an amazing opportunity to work there with Heather Collart, the founder and philanthropist, working with Dean Taylor Randall up at the University of Utah.
You know, I want to say one thing. We actually have less than a minute here. I'm assuming, first of all, talking about your book, it is available on Amazon. Is that correct?
It's available for pre-order right now. Yep, you can get The Entrepreneur's Paradox on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere fine books are sold.
Okay, tell you what I'm going to do. There's a typical line, anywhere fine books are sold. Let me tell you, I'm going to put up a link for your book. I'm going to make it very easy for people to pick it up if they would like to. Curtis, it has been a real pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, we right now have the top of the hour news. Big Al is going to be right back. Curtis, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for the second half of the KER Report. We are stressing on the radio programs, not necessarily political issues anymore. We're going to stress sound economic issues. You know, when a guy's got a couple of master's degrees in economics and an undergraduate degree in economics can really do that well. Having said that, we're also going to devote one segment a week to what I call non-secular issues with a buddy of mine who is a physician down in Texas. Very, very devout man. We're not going to be thumping anything. We're basically going to be getting his views on how to make life better. His name, obviously, is Dr. Charles Page, MD, physician. Chuck, what do you want to talk about this particular week? Hey, bud, how you doing?
I'm great. Merry Christmas. I'm thinking about just a simple Christmas wish. You know, so many of us have lost so many things in 2020. We look back at 2020 and in hindsight, and it's really kind of depressing in a sense. You know, some people have experienced anxiety, depression, emotional pain, and just
right.
Thinking back, it's been so tumultuous. And, you know, we've lost so many things. So many people lost jobs, financial losses. We've lost friends and loved ones from COVID. You know, but I think something else, we've lost this sense of maybe stability and security, predictability, all of these things. We've kind of lost a life that we once maybe felt comfortable in. And thinking about this upheaval and this uncertainty, you know, I think about the first Christmas Eve and looking back and thinking about those times when Christ was born. You know, think about this. As a result of a government mandate, a socially isolated, very economically poor young couple had to journey 90 miles on foot to a small town to be registered for a census. You know, she was in her mid-teens and probably going into labor early, and they were trying to find a place to stay in this little town that was busting at the seams from all the travelers, and they couldn't find a place to stay, and they had a child, and he was placed in rags, and they put him in a feeding trough, you know? And thinking about that, and thinking about the message that the shepherds received, you know, there in the book of Luke, it said, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news, which is for all people. Today a Savior has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord. You'll find this baby wrapped in rags and lying in a feed trough. Glory to God and peace to those on whom his favor rests." And, you know, as I think about that, Al, and think about all of the losses we've suffered, I just want to encourage people to not be afraid. Do not be afraid, like the angel said, that we are not alone. And the good news is that we have hope because of that baby that was born in a manger, you know, and that's, I think, really good news that we need to fixate on. With all the losses that we have, we also have the gift of love that God gave us. And so I'm just thinking about some affirmations, you know, and just thinking about this, you know, in this crazy world of loss and pain, I just want to, you know, give myself permission to grieve and to keep going. You know, in the midst of all the crazy, what, Al?
No, go ahead, keep going. I just want to say it's very important to give yourself permission to keep going and to keep growing.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and in all these negative messages that we're seeing every day, just to guard our hearts and to be more loving to other people and express love, faith, hope, and courage to people, even when people are telling us all of these negative things. And instead of responding in fear, anger, and hatred, pursuing peace, wisdom, and understanding with other people, you know, amidst all this uncertainty, you know, to be kind and compassionate and be a hope giver to other people. I think those are some things, you know,
take a deep breath. Instead of what, bud?
Instead of responding negatively to all the things that we're hearing, let's be people who respond with hope, healing, grow, mature, and make a difference for good.
You bet. Making a difference for good is what life is really all about. That's what he told us to do. You know, I want to throw one other thing in here. It is absolutely in zero conflict with Christianity. It's in zero conflict with Judaism, and that's called Buddhist philosophy. I'm starting to study a bit on Buddhist philosophy, and I want to tell you, if you guys want some sources, It is really, really an interesting way to live. I obviously put Buddhist philosophy behind my Christianity, and I'm sure that a Jewish individual would probably put Buddhist philosophy behind the Jewish laws. But the fact of the matter is, it's in zero conflict with Christianity, and it can make your life a lot better, make your life a better person for God. Chuck, we got about 3 minutes left here. What are you and your family, what did you and your family do to celebrate Christmas? Why was it important to you guys?
Well, I mean, it's important for several reasons. You know, we don't know what next year brings. And right now, my wife just went through a surgery, and she's slowly recuperating and thinking about her health. You know, she's, for the first time, she's not had any neck pain. She had a huge neck surgery. By the way, Al, I'm a pain in the neck.
There you go.
So we're thankful for our
the long, tall, you know, Texan and, who's the pain in the neck.
That's me. And just ask my wife. But, you know, but also in the process, with all these separation anxiety that I was feeling and that she was feeling and having surgery and not having anybody in the hospital with her, they were able to diagnose her with sleep apnea. And we just got a test.
Oh,
and
now you're kidding.
Found that there was another health problem that she had. You know, we're so thankful for that. I mean, for the health that we have. And we think about living in the United States and all the, you know, all the resources that we have. I mean, in some countries, you know, they're suffering with COVID and they don't have any ventilators. They don't have oxygen.
Yep.
They don't have all the resources that we do. So just remembering and keeping things in context, you know, and then focusing on those certainties. You know, you're talking about the Buddhist faith. Well, you know, all truth is God's truth. And every you know, faith-based system, there are some things that we can, you know, that we can glean on as far as truth. But just thinking about the certainty and the absolutes of Scripture and the hope that we have in Christmas, you know, and that God, you know, Jesus came to do for us what we can't do for ourselves. Man, what a message of hope that is for us.
Well, it sounds to me, Charles, like it's really helped you guys quite a bit, obviously, your entire family. I'm glad your wife is doing well. There's no question whatsoever about that.
Yep.
You know, as listeners are aware, this sounds like it's off topic a little bit, but it's really not. I'm switching back into the subject that I happen to know quite a bit about, and that's investing in precious metals. You know, that goes along very, very closely with Christianity, and I want to say I think it's the best move that I've ever made in a long time. In terms of politics, we're going to handle that in a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, in the forum for the podcast, you can make any comments you want about politics. Chuck, it sounds to me like you guys had a wonderful Christmas. I am so glad your message was incredibly beneficial. Thanks, my friend. Hey, welcome back to the KER Report. Big Alan wants to mention one thing right now. I'm going to start the new year, do very, very little politics. The reason I'm doing that is because I established a reputation as knowing who to talk to in the precious metals sector. Last week, I talked with Doc Richard Postma. This week, I'm talking with a very close friend of mine who has proven in the past to be one of the best in terms of calling the precious metals markets. And, of course, that's Rick Ackerman. Rick, I think we're in a perfect storm right now, if you want to know the truth, regarding precious metals, gold and silver. Gold is doing very well right now. I have always said, as I said years and years ago, this is going back 7 or 8 years, the political turmoil, I thought, was a good sign for the gold market. One of the reasons I'm getting out of politics, Rick, on a personal note, is I just cannot figure out what's going on. But what's going on has everything to do with the word turmoil. And I think this is truly, truly setting the stage for a gold market the likes of which I haven't seen. What's your opinion on that?
Well, first, thanks for inviting me on, Al. It's been a while since we talked, but I always enjoy connecting with your big audience. I have somewhat mixed feelings about gold. You know, my own subscriber base counts on me to give it to them straight. And
exactly.
I guess you could say I'm writing for an audience that's perennially a little more bullish on gold than I am. Not that I'm not a bull. You know, if you look at the longer term charts, the uptrend is pretty clear. But I have to say that gold, it's been holding its own really against not so much things that are the usual negatives for gold, but just I would say the speculative energy is focused elsewhere. And so gold, I think, is doing well. Just to say screw you, I mean, there are days when opportunistic forces gang up on gold and they'll knock it down. We've seen even $100 in a day, and that's strictly a sideshow. It's the big guys, essentially bullion bankers and the other sleazeballs covering short paper positions in gold, or sometimes even physical shorts. And so they opportunistically bang the market down, not because there's anything going on in the news world that's bad for gold, but just something that at least might be perceived by a lot of the imbeciles who think, oh, geez, the world is ending, as reason to knock gold down. But you notice that this happens for just a day, and then the bears kind of struggle to get gold down anymore. So gold is just, it's just biding its time, I think, waiting for opportunity. And then there, you know, we better be careful what we wish for, because anything that's opportunity for gold could conceivably spell trouble for the world.
Well, it really could, Rick. The only comment I would make is, in terms of the world right now, with what we're looking at in China, Russia, Europe, the United States, I got to tell you, from a political standpoint, I don't think it could get much crazier. And that's one of the reasons I'm not going to be doing a lot of commentary on it in the future, because it just doesn't make any sense. What really makes sense to me is the economic point, that the amount of debt going on in the world, and let's just talk about the United States right now, is unsustainable, as it was when I was considered to be an expert in gold. Well, I'm not that expert today, but let me tell you, very shortly I will be. And before we're done talking, I'll tell you what my first entrance into the gold market is going to be. But I got to tell you, I think that with the debt situation right now, Social Security verging on collapse, I think anybody who doesn't have at least a foundation in gold is nuts. Any comments?
Well, I always think that gold's going to be great to have in a pinch. And, you know, whether we're headed into deflation, which is where I think we're going, or a hyperinflation, I'm pretty sure that gold's going to retain its purchasing power.
Sure it is.
Relative to all other classes of investable assets. So I like gold. I'm not a gold $50,000 an ounce guy, or even $10,000 an ounce, but I think that you're always going to have purchasing power parity in gold, that you're not going to lose any ground. And, you know, now don't be too discouraged, because all of the speculative flow is going into Bitcoin.
You know, I don't know a lot about Bitcoin, and that's something, I know enough about it to be dangerous. That's something I want to talk to you about perhaps next time. I personally, on the record, am going to start out with some coins, some gold bullion, purely, and I guess that isn't coins. I'm going to start out with some gold bullion. I will put my order in at the market with a dealer on this coming Friday, the day after Christmas. And I think that is a very intelligent thing to do. I should have never left this market, Rick. Any comments?
Well, I think you've been on the long term. Excuse me, I've got a little frog in my throat here.
Don't let it get out. You're going to scare the hell out of your wife. Don't do that. Don't open your mouth, Rick. Let me just talk for a minute. Will you keep your mouth closed? Keep that frog in there, buddy. I like gold again. I don't know why I ever got out of that sector. At least this particular sector makes sense. Politics makes absolutely no sense. Sorry about that, guys. Rick, you're on. Is a frog gone?
A little bit. There I just took a sip of water, and it went down the wrong way.
Oh, well.
Anyway, I think you've been in for the long the long haul, Al.
Yep.
And it's been a... Hold on, Al.
Yeah. Well, I think the long haul is what it's all about. That's something I should have learned from my long-gone parents. You know, every time I look in our... I don't want to call it a storage locker, but every time I look at what my parents left me, it all consists, quite frankly, of gold coins and silver coins. And I should have taken a lesson from that because they are worth today one hell of a lot more than they were worth, you know, when they passed on into the next chapter of the Book of Life. I really also want to say one other thing. As soon as I get my feet fully on the ground in terms of this sector, I'm going to be back investing in the stocks that I did pretty well at for the 40 years that I was in business. Rick, let me ask you one real quick question. We have got, what is it? We've got about 2 minutes left here. 1 minute, no, 2 minutes, I'm sorry, left here. I know that we have a link to your subscription site for your newsletter. I hope it's doing you some good. I want to say on a personal note, I've known this guy for probably 25, 30 years. The one thing, Rick, and I, we've been through thick and thin together. We are personal friends. We are family friends. Let me tell you, this guy has all the respect in the world. I can't say enough positive things about Rick Ackerman and Rick's Picks. Rick, we're going to get you on the show more often. I'm going to count on you. The reason I'm doing that is because I respect you. I respect you. You made me look good for the, oh gosh, probably 30, 35, 40 years that you were a regular guest on my program. It was a pleasure in the past to introduce you at various investment conferences where you and I were appearing. It was a real pleasure to be associated with you as it is today, Mr. Ackerman. How do you like your new home? You got 10 seconds. You got good weather down there.
Well, sunny Florida. It's a little too hot for too much of the year, Al, but I'm learning to live with it. It's certainly pleasant this time of year. And, you know, it's nice to have BM beach days when you're reading about blizzards up in the Northeast.
I got you, bud. Hey, we're out of time. Listen, I love having you on the show. Going to become a regular guest. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Al.
Hey, you are great, man. Hey, I just want to add one thing here. It is a real pleasure to get Rick Ackerman back. Rick's Picks is a great newsletter. He's been doing it for probably 50 years now or thereabouts. No hiccups yet. I want to elaborate on how I'm going to get back into the precious metals market initially. I'm going to buy a little bit of gold bullion and coins. As I said, I'm doing that kind of as a celebration in honor of my parents. I will be going into gold mining stock. Be doing that shortly as soon as I get my feet back on the ground. Hope you guys had a great holiday. See you soon.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.